Morning. Please be seated. Counsel? State versus Slatum.
Kathleen Weber for the state. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. In this particular appeal, the state is asking the court to construe the meaning of the post-conviction DNA statute, and in particular the word imprisonment. To begin with, I'd like the court to consider the individual who is on community custody, the individual who goes to his community custody.
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
Sure.
Which community custody definition are you relying on? As you probably know, Mr. Slayton was sentenced under the indeterminate sentencing review scheme. So there's a particular definition of community custody that would apply here. I notice the state relies on the more general one under the SRA.
That was the definition that the trial court relied on when it concluded that Mr. Slatum was satisfied the condition that he be imprisoned, and that is the definition that
I'm
relying on.
Isn't that the one the both parties argued to the court, though?
No, I didn't argue to the court that the defendant was on that community custody. Well, I guess I don't understand the court's question. Are you asking, did we rely on the general definition of community custody?
I think you answered that question, but why would that definition apply when, in fact, he was sentenced as a sex offender under the indeterminate sentencing provisions under Chapter 995, which defines community custody much differently? I'll read it to you. It says, community custody means that portion of an offender's sentence subject to controls, including crime-related prohibitions and affirmative conditions from the court, the board, meaning the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board, or the Department of Corrections, based on his risk to the community safety that is served under supervision in the community and which may be modified or revoked for violations of release conditions. Does that change the analysis?
It doesn't, because both the definition used by the trial court and the definition just recited to me by the court uses the term in the community, and that's a significant difference between the term in the post-conviction DNA statute, imprisonment, and community custody under either statute, is because community custody is served in the community. Now, the example that I started with was the individual who is on community custody. It doesn't matter if it's regular community custody or indeterminate community custody.
Well, he's sentenced to a potential of a life sentence. That's the maximum. And under this sentencing scheme, 9.95, he has the potential of being sentenced to a maximum of life imprisonment, does he not?
If he is actually in prison, then yes, that's true.
How do you arrive at that distinction?
I don't think it makes a big difference, quite frankly, if it's under community custody where the maximum term of community custody is 5 years or 10 years, or if the maximum term is life imprisonment. And the reason for that is because an offender who is out in the community subject to controls is always subject to the possibility that if he violates any condition of community custody, he could be put back in prison. And I don't think the court should get hung up on whether or not it's the life imprisonment possibility or a 10-year possibility of being put back into prison. The operative term here is that he is serving that period of community custody in the community. It is different from imprisonment. And
how do you define imprisonment?
Well,
or how does the legislature define it? And does it define it differently in various portions of the statute?
In the context of this particular statute that we're talking about, it does not have a specific definition. And so the court then relies on the common ordinary meaning, and that can be derived from the dictionary definition.
Now, why do you rely on the common ordinary dictionary definition. It seems to me that the technical definitions apply here.
There is no technical definition that has been assigned by the legislature.
What about total confinement? Hasn't the legislature defined total confinement as meaning something that is more akin to what the state is arguing, that is an institution?
But that's not the term that the legislature used in connection with the post-conviction DNA statute. They used the term.
Doesn't it suggest, though, that they could have defined it as they have in other instances if they meant in a state-operated facility?
The legislature simply used the term imprisonment. The rules of statutory construction are that when a term is not specially defined by the legislature, you resort to the common ordinary meaning. That common ordinary meaning can be derived from a dictionary definition. The dictionary definition as cited to the court by the parties includes confinement as if in a prison. And as if in a prison means you are stuck in a place. You don't get to decide where you go. You don't get to decide when you eat. You don't get to decide who you associate with. And so that's the specific difference between what the trial court decided applied here and what actually applies here, what the analysis is. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 4 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you. May it please the court, Madam Prosecutor. My name is Jacob Deshaun. I'm a Rule 9 legal intern with the Innocence Project Northwest. We represent Mr. Slatim in this matter. Your Honors, we ask that you affirm the trial court's finding in this matter that an individual serving a term of community custody is
how do you eligible. Define that term? Which term applies? Which definition applies? The one that he was sentenced under, the indeterminate sentencing scheme, or the general SRA definition of community custody? They're very, very different.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it doesn't change the analysis. The analysis or the definition, the statutory definition that we relied on in our argument is the definition that indicates that community custody is the portion of a defendant's or individual sentence of confinement. So that's the definition that we relied on and believe applies in this case. However, I don't believe it changes the analysis to indicate that it is, I believe you recited the definition earlier.
Asking the court to limit its holding, if we agree with Mr. Slatim's position, to just sex offenders sentenced under the indeterminate sentencing portion of the law, or are you asking us, can you help us there?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, we believe that the term imprisonment, and I believe the state got into some of the plain meaning definitions of the term. The case before us is one of community custody, as you indicate, one for a sex offender. I don't believe I have the facts in front of me to indicate how expansive the term imprisonment
is.
It's
very expansive. Mm-hmm. If you ask us to hold that anyone in community custody for purposes of this post-DNA, anyone on community custody would be most serious offenses. It would involve all sex crimes. The statute actually spells out quite a long list of crimes that would be subject to community custody.
Yes, Your Honor. And while while we argue that the term imprisonment should be construed in its broad sense in this context, simply because an individual is on community custody does not mean that they will qualify for post-conviction DNA testing under this statute. There are quite a number of other limiting factors in this statute, such as having to prove that an individual would be able to prove their innocence on a more probable than not basis. So there are quite a few other hurdles an individual submitting a request for post-conviction DNA testing would have to clear in order to...
Why don't you help us a little bit with what's at issue in this case, which is to whom does the statute's benefits apply, and what the legislature intended by its use of the term imprisonment in the context of this statute. And let's leave for a second the plain meaning rule versus everything else. That is, what A, artificial, B, for learning anything from the reign of and Justice Scalia, it is about this. So tell me how it is that I can get past the plain meaning for interpretation of what the legislature meant here.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that there are many other instances in which the legislature has used the term imprisonment. And as indicated in the state
all
v. Anderson.
All that tells me is they don't know what they're doing. What did they intend to do by this statute?
Your Honor, there are, when this statute was passed, it was intended to provide some relief for individuals who have been convicted of serious crimes and insert some level of certainty in the convictions handed down by the court. So the overall intention of the statute, as it was amended in 2001, where it removed the life sentence requirement or the death sentence requirement, it was essentially to expand it to those serving a term of imprisonment, Your Honor. So therefore, we have to look to the plain meaning, as I'm sure Your Honor is aware, in order to derive specifically what the legislature intended by that.
But in this context, aren't we coming from a history, not just in the state of Washington, but throughout the United States, of jurisprudence with regard to claims of innocence subsequent to conviction, not reversed on appeal for other reasons, procedural or substantive, which is, if for want of a better term, somewhat jaundiced in its view with regard to the individual versus the overall benefits to the system of certainty. So that in the legislature in opening this up, which is what they've done with the statutory scheme, it seems to me, which may or may not be good, I'm not arguing with what the legislature chose to do, can choose to do it very narrowly. Can they not?
Your Honor, the legislature could conceivably choose to do it narrowly. However, we have no other indications as to what the legislature intended beyond the actual statutory language, and you know, we do have to rely on the clear, plain meaning of the statute before we look at any other sources.
In which case you lose.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
In which case you would lose. The plain meaning of the word is confined in an institution, and it has meant that for centuries.
Your Honor, the plain meaning that we've relied on, Black's Law Dictionary indicates that the definition of the term imprisonment is the act of being confined, especially in a prison.
That nicely begs the question, doesn't it?
Your Honor, but also I would like to refer the court to State v. Anderson, handed down by this court in 2009, in which case the question was whether or not electronic home monitoring could be included in the definition of imprisonment. And that the court in that case concluded that it could. Therefore, we have precedent by this court indicating that imprisonment necessarily is a broader term than confinement in an institution. In that case, the court actually rejected many of the arguments that the state is making today regarding the plain meaning of that term.
Did I sign it? Hopefully not.
No, you're right. I do not recall seeing your name associated with that case, Your Honor.
I just don't know when I'm arguing with myself.
Counsel, can you, I'm sorry, Judge Gross, can you address a contention the state has made, and that is that the rule of lenity only applies to punitive statutes, not procedural statutes? What's your position on that?
Your Honor, it's our position that this statutory scheme, in particular the post-conviction DNA statute, is not ambiguous in this case. Therefore, we don't believe the rule of lenity should be applied. However,
if it does, what's your position?
If it does, Your Honor, we believe the rule of lenity should be applied in this case, and that's for a couple different reasons.
Not whether it applies or not, but the state has fine-tuned that, and that is to say that it only applies to punitive statutes, not remedial.
Your Honor, based on our reading of the particular cases that the state has argued in support of that proposition, there's nothing in those cases that prohibits the application of the rule of lenity in a context such as this. Rather, the cases support the assertion that the rule of lenity has been applied in statutes such as Your Honor's asking about, but there's nothing that prohibits the application of the rule of lenity in these cases, whether criminal or civil. I believe the state cited State v. Thompson, and in that case, the rule of lenity was applied to a tax statute in a civil context. And while there were criminal ramifications associated with that, that it was a purely civil context, as the state argues this is today. And, Your Honors, I would like to just indicate the state has made a number of arguments regarding how the legislature has used the term imprisonment in support of its argument that imprisonment must mean confinement within the four walls of a jail cell. Yet in every single one of the statutes the state has cited, there's limiting language. That is to say, the state indicates, or the legislature indicates, that imprisonment in a penal correctional facility or imprisonment in prison, for example, demonstrating the legislature is fully aware of the breadth of the term imprisonment and is able to.
But most of those citations were in conjunction with in a correctional facility or a juvenile facility, so they're trying to be clear about whether it's an adult or a juvenile facility or a prison or a jail, where they're distinguishing in context who's picking up the tab and which facility they're in. I didn't see a single citation where I thought it was a standalone, and didn't find that persuasive at all.
Your Honor, I would like to reference.
I mean, in fact, they didn't say anyone who has not yet completed their sentence is eligible for testing. And certainly, the average person, if they ran into Mr. Slatim on the street, would not view Mr. Slatim as imprisoned.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would agree with Your Honor to the extent that someone who runs into Mr. Slatim on the street wouldn't agree that he is in the four walls of a prison cell. Whether or not he meets the definition of imprisonment as it's defined as confinement, especially in a prison, or the State v. Anderson definition of imprisonment is what we can.
There's two.
Yes, Your Honor. The 2009 Anderson handed down by
from
the
Division One.
Yes, from Division One, Your Honor.
But that speaks in terms of a statute that calls electronic home monitoring as partial confinement, and there is partial confinement. There. Different statute, different definition.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel.
The parties seem to agree that the language used by the legislature is clear. You know, if you resort to the common ordinary meaning of imprisonment, it means confined by the four walls of some building, subject to somebody telling you what you have to do and when you have to do it. But if there's any uncertainty about what that statute means or what that term means, this court certainly can refer to legislative history, which certainly supports the state's position that imprisonment means in prison or in jail or the functional equivalent thereof. And I would suggest to the court the functional there. Equivalent thereof might mean, like, if an offender is sick and in the hospital under guard, that might be similar to being in prison.
What's the purpose behind the state's firm position on this matter?
Well, it's fiscal, really. It's the legislature made it pretty clear when they enacted this that they wanted to balance the difference between making sure that people who really were innocent had the benefit of this testing, but they didn't want to open the floodgates to public funding for everybody who possibly might otherwise be eligible for testing, who happens to not be in prison. They want to balance the interests of how much it's going to cost and the toll it's going to take on the crime lab as far as the number of additional tests, and I went into this in my response to the motion to dismiss. There's the affidavit from Dr. Shuttler talking about the impact on the crime lab and the effect.
The impact on the crime lab of everybody who has been sentenced is entitled to this, or the impact on the crime lab of anybody who continues to be under the disability of a sentence. Or
well, if you look at
any number of other ways.
Sure. I mean, if you look at the numbers that I cited in my response, we have 1.5 times as many people who are on community custody as who are currently in prison as of the 2009 numbers. That greatly expands the number of potential people under the trial court's interpretation who are eligible for this post-conviction DNA testing. At any given time, we have 1,000 cases that are in the pipeline for DNA testing. Most of those are for people or for cases that are currently under investigation or currently going to trial. So if we have a whole bunch more people who are on community custody who suddenly become eligible for this, then we have a whole bunch more cases that are going to the crime lab that are going to prevent those investigations, that are going to hold up trials from happening in a timely fashion.
The distinction here, then, is You're very good at the parade of horribles. I understand where it leads.
Yeah.
The question is, whose funds are we expending and at what cost? And it seems to me that then the distinction is not, we've lost sight of the real issue, innocence. And if you had DNA testing done and as a result were convicted, you don't get to do it again in all likelihood because you're not going to satisfy the rest of the statute. So the distinction here is people who didn't have DNA testing done and were convicted versus those who are now being charged. And I'm not sure that's a distinction that we can sustain constitutionally. So the next case you're going to get is the constitutional challenge.
Well, we're not there yet. But
well, we could solve that, couldn't we? And then you could go down to the legislature and you could take it where it belongs because they're the ones in charge of fiscal impact.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor, and that's one of the reasons why I said that even though it's moot, this court should consider it, and the court did deny the motion to dismiss in part on that basis.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just trying to make the mountain out of this molehill to justify being here.
I understand. You know, here's the problem is that there's only so much public money to go around, and so the legislature had to balance, you know, who are we going to provide this public money for? It never prevents the individual from providing their own money for post-conviction DNA testing. It's just public money. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, both counsel. Excellent argument.
Thank you.